Recorded Books is pleased to present the Modern Scholar series, where great professors teach you. My name is George Wilson, and I'll be your host. Today we begin a course entitled Unseen Diversity, The World of Bacteria. Your professor is Betsy Dexter Dyer, a biology professor at Wheaton College in Norton, Massachusetts, where her courses include bacteriology, genetics, parasitology, and invertebrate evolution. She earned her Ph.D. in biology at Boston University in 1984. Professor Dyer's research interests include DNA sequence analysis, cell evolution, symbiosis, and field microbiology. She considers herself to be a curious naturalist and a generalist with lots more to learn. She has written 3 books, including A Field Guide to Bacteria. For more information on this course, please visit its webpage at www.modernscholar.com. You can access this course by using the password 1121BDD. Again, that's 1121BDD. Once there, you'll have access to links to related sites, a seminar room to share your thoughts with other students, and yes, of course, a final exam. And now we begin Unseen Diversity, The World of Bacteria, Lecture 1, Introduction to the Bacterial World. And now, Professor Dyer.
This series of lectures is about bacteria. They are the most numerous of all organisms on Earth. They are the most diverse of all organisms on Earth. And they are invisible to our eyes. And that poses a particular challenge if we are to understand them. And it's a challenge that I enjoy dealing with and thinking about. And it will be an aspect particularly of this first lecture. I have several goals and aspirations for this course on bacteria. One of them is that I am hoping that you will come away from this recognizing that bacteria are most of the biodiversity on Earth. I would like to add a bacterial dimension to your nature studies, whatever they are. I certainly have a bacterial dimension to my nature studies. I'm a naturalist. I consider myself to be an amateur naturalist. I enjoy a walk in the woods in which I identify as many different things as I can. And I include bacteria, and I would like for you to consider including bacteria as a dimension to your nature studies as well. I think it is also important to place bacteria into the context of other microorganisms as well as organisms as a whole. That's another goal for this course. And finally, I'd like to put pathogens into their correct context. In fact, I have an entire lecture just on pathogens, but I will be alluding to them throughout because I think it's the pathogens of all the bacteria that tend to be getting the most press. Some of it is not flattering to them. It makes them sound as though they are the majority of bacteria, which they are not. And I think it's an important aspect of this series of lectures to get them into their context amongst all of bacteria. Now, the first challenge is that we have our own particular human point of view. And it does not get acknowledged enough, I think, in nature studies. We are actually anomalous compared to most organisms on Earth in a number of different ways, and that has an effect on the way that we look at things. So what I want to do is something a little strange for the beginning of a series of lectures on bacteria. I want to talk about ourselves as humans and why it is that we have a particularly challenging task to understand bacteria. First of all, it's our size. We are enormous. We are among the larger of organisms on Earth. Vast majority of organisms are microscopic. Vast majority of organisms are, in fact, bacteria, tiny, invisible bacteria, invisible to our eyes. So our own size is anomalous. We are enormous. We are also multicellular, which is unusual. Again, the vast majority of organisms are single cells. We are multicellular. That's how we get to be so large. We are highly morphological. We have shapes. We have structures. And we appreciate shapes and structures in other organisms. We are visually oriented. We can see color. We look around for other organisms that have morphologies, shapes, and colors. We also look around for other organisms that have activity levels and types of activities that are identifiable in some way to us or interpretable, whether we're right or wrong about that. We're looking for other organisms that seem to be in our same world. Therefore, we're wonderful at looking at birds and insects and mammals, other mammals. We have a great deal of difficulty with things that are much tinier than ourselves. We are terrestrial. We live on land, not any old land. We live on the surface of the land, and we tend to live in relatively temperate to tropical climates. And that does not get acknowledged enough, I think. Most of the world is aquatic. Most of the world is oceans. Most of the world is watery and deep. And that's not our place on Earth. We actually don't know much about the depths of the ocean, except in submersible submarines that some researchers have taken down to the depths, or except perhaps from dredgings that have been hauled up from the depths or nettings that have been hauled up. But for the most part, we're terrestrial surface dwellers, very small part of the Earth's surface. And that also has an effect on our appreciation for biodiversity as a whole. I don't think we have the full appreciation that we could ever have of what's going on in the aquatic part of the world, which is most of the world. Bacteria, by the way, are entirely aquatic. I want to add bacteria to your nature studies, and I realize it's a challenge for me as well as you. I'm a great appreciator of birds, of flowers, of mammals, of trees, of insects. I have field guides for all of those. And what I want to do is to make the bacterial world seem maybe not as accessible as those things, but something approaching as accessible as those larger organisms that we tend to appreciate. I want to say that the microbial world is not optional for understanding and appreciating biodiversity. If we want to understand what the biodiversity of Earth is all about, we have to include the bacteria. Yet, I challenge you to take an ecology textbook, maybe of the sort that you used in college, or maybe one that you can find in a library, nice, thick ecology textbook of the sort that an ecology course is taught from. Look up whatever keywords pertaining to bacteria or microorganisms or microbes that you want in the index, and find most likely in that entire book there are maybe only 3 or 4 mentions of bacteria or microbes or microorganisms. And that ecology textbook purports to be about all of the ecosystem, presumably the biodiversity of Earth and all of the interactions of the various organisms. Where are the bacteria in that? Notice if you do this, if you actually take a book and take a look at the index, notice how the bacteria are mentioned. There will be a couple of pages on the methanogens. Those are bacteria that produce methane. So that's important. Where is the methane on Earth coming from? It's only coming from bacteria. So bacteria have to be given credit for that, and therefore you find them in an ecology textbook in the index. You will also find bacteria in the context of something called fixing nitrogen. And I will go into much more detail about what that means in subsequent lectures, but only bacteria can do this thing called fixing nitrogen, and therefore they get credit for that in the ecology textbook. And they will also be part of a chapter on decomposition. What happens, for example, when a leaf falls to the forest floor or when a bird dies and begins to decay on the forest floor, that whole topic called decomposition, and they will be given partial credit for their role in that. Certainly fungi are important, and all sorts of detritus feeders are important in decomposition. But that will be it. Those will be the mentions in the ecology textbook. So where are the bacteria? So I have something to prove here, I think, in these lectures. I need to show you that bacteria are accessible. They are the unseen majority of organisms on Earth, yet they are recognizable if you know what to recognize, if you can decipher them in the environment. So those are the challenges ahead for me as the lecturer for this course. And to summarize my goals, I want to add a bacterial dimension to your nature studies. I want to show them off, actually. I want to not tell you about all possible bacteria. There are probably millions of species. I have to be selective here in a lecture series of just 14. So I want to show off some of the most versatile and interesting bacteria that have stories to them and that are at the same time ones that you might be able to see yourself if you were looking for them. And I want to place the pathogens in context again. I also want to say something about my own background in this and how I came to be interested in the topic of bacteria, particularly from this point of view of seeing them as a major aspect of nature studies and something that is more accessible than is obvious at first. Back in 1980, when I was a graduate student in biology, I had the privilege to be on a field trip to Baja California, Mexico, with a group of some of the best field microbiologists in the world. It was part of a field microbiology course. And up to that point, I was respectful of bacteria. I certainly encountered bacteria in my PhD studies and in my master's degree studies, and even before that in some work that I did as an undergraduate in college. I was not especially interested in them. They seemed tiny, which is obvious. They lacked morphology, which is obvious. And they were not as interesting as other things that I might see under the microscope, some classic things that you know from introductory biology classes, perhaps, paramecium scurrying around under the microscope, or amoebae, and other things that are really on a larger scale, nonetheless microscopic. So up to that point, up till 1980, in this field trip that I got to take, I was not especially enamored of bacteria, and I certainly did not see them as being especially accessible. There on that field trip, I saw field microbiologists, specialists in all different aspects of looking for bacteria out in the field, out in the wild, picking up bits of scum and slime and flocks and sniffing them and feeling the textures of them and examining the colors of them. In some cases, even taking little tastes. There was absolutely no danger of pathogens out there. And some of these field microbiologists were European and accustomed to doing a bit of tasting in their field studies on some circumstances. And at that point, I had this vision of a field guide to bacteria. Now, I was a graduate student amongst other graduate students. I had no thought that I would be writing a field guide to bacteria or that I would ever become involved with this sort of topic as I am now. At that point, as a graduate student, I whispered to one of my fellow graduate students, one of these people should write a field guide to the bacteria, because I could see it as being possible. They were picking up bits of scum and slime and sniffing them and tasting them and examining the colors and saying, I know what group of bacteria this is, and I know what the relationships of these bacteria are to the other bacteria in this environment. By the way, Baja California, Mexico, the particular place that we were in was almost entirely bacterial. It's the area we were in was a very deserty, salty area where larger organisms do not thrive, especially in the midst of the highest salt area. And it was a real microbial paradise. And so we were standing out in the middle of this in the blazing hot sun, surrounded by bacteria, none of them pathogens, absolutely none of them pathogens. Never a thought about that, essentially identifying them in the field macroscopically without the use of microscopes. Well, years later, got my PhD, got a job, got a family, and found myself with some time to do some writing and ended up writing a field guide to bacteria. And it came out of essentially notes from experts in the field, experts who have spent their lives trying to identify bacteria in the field. And all I did was compile those together, essentially from notes, and thus came the field guide to bacteria. So that's how I come to be with this particular point of view about this, but also with a real understanding of the challenges of this whole field, that I'm not simply giving a lecture on how to go and identify birds or how to look at flowers. There's something on a different level here that I'm trying to do. And that's why I'm perhaps belaboring some points about our own particular point of view. So let me transition to what I call broad generalizations about bacteria, some of which are going to seem so obvious that they don't need to be stated, and yet sometimes it is the most obvious that should be stated so that we don't overlook it and take it for granted. So these are going to be some very broad generalizations, and then I will elaborate a bit on them and try to use those to help us to see bacteria in the context of biodiversity. One way that I sometimes think about this is that bacteria are hidden in plain sight, which is a phrase that I've stolen from the cryptographers, who might use a phrase like that to refer to some text that can be seen as long as you know the way to decode it, as long as you can use cryptoanalysis to decode it. So the text, the encoded text, is in plain sight. You just need to decipher it. And I think that is the way that the bacterial world can be taken as well. So here's the first generality about bacteria. They are the most numerous of all organisms on Earth. How numerous? Well, some scientists at University of Georgia undertook the calculation to figure out how numerous they are, and they came up with a number, an amazing number, which is 5 times 10 to the 30th power, 30. 5 times 10 to the 30th power. And when I talk to my students about a number that large, I say, this number is really beyond what we can easily imagine as large. When we say large, we might be thinking in terms of billions or trillions or multi-trillions, but even those numbers start to go out of sight of what our usual understanding of large numbers is like. So that's how many organisms there are on Earth that are bacteria, and they far, far outnumber any other organisms. And I'll actually give you the logic for why they far outnumber them. First of all, though, let's think about what those folks at University of Georgia had to do to get this estimate of 5 times 10 to the 30th as the number of living bacteria on Earth. Well, for starters, they had to consider every single cubic centimeter of all of the water on Earth. For example, they would take a cubic centimeter of water, and I don't necessarily always mean literally take that cubic centimeter. I mean consider a cubic centimeter of water in the surface of the ocean in the tropics, for example. Count every single bacterium in that cubic centimeter and then multiply by the surface area of the ocean in that particular area, tropical ocean, presumably either near shore or not near shore. And then do that again and again and again for the entire depth of the ocean, for the entire surface of the ocean. And remember, the oceans are the greatest part of the biodiversity on Earth. And get a number from that. Then they would need to take every single fractal surface of everything on Earth down into the depths of the soil where there are all these little cracks and crevices and passageways. Every single surface in and out of every organism on Earth, every animal, every plant, and by the way, that's the logic behind my saying that they far outnumber every single other organism on Earth, because they cover every single other organism on Earth. Take all of those numbers together, and they came up with this amazing number of 5 times 10 to the 30th power. By the way, there is another enormous amount of bacteria apparently circulating the Earth at all times in the atmosphere as tiny, tiny particulates, along with all the other particulates up there. I don't count those, and they did not count those into this calculation of 5 times 10 to the 30th, because it's not entirely clear whether those bacteria are doing anything active. They may be in a dormant state and may become active if they drop down onto Earth and get into a situation where there's something that they can do. So there's another dormant, huge population circulating the Earth at any time. This is a good time for me to say most of them aren't pathogens. 5 times 10 to the 30th, the vast majority are not pathogens. And again, there'll be a lecture entirely about that to really reinforce that particular point. So that was generality number one, most numerous on Earth. Generality number two, they are the most diverse of all organisms on Earth. And you could do this exercise yourself, either think it in your head or actually literally do it. What I do when I'm talking in front of a class is I stretch my arms up over my head and then to either side as though we are doing a great big stretching exercise. And I say, imagine this to be the family tree of all organisms, with my arms and fingers representing all of the branches of all of the organisms that live on Earth. And when I say all, I mean all of the animals, all of the plants, all of the fungi, all of the protists or protozoans, all of the bacteria. Imagine all of the organisms represented that way. The vast majority of that diversity is bacteria. And if you were to look for the fungi and the animals and the plants and the protozoans or protists, the other groups of organisms, they would be essentially off on their own branch. Oh, stick it off to the right side. It doesn't really matter where it is, but if you're trying to envision it, shoot your right arm out to the side and imagine that to be the branch that comprises all the rest of the organisms that are not bacterial. Now, how we figure out a family tree like that today is we use DNA sequences. So folks that have organized all of the bacteria on a family tree and organized the other organisms on that same family tree have gotten sequences for all of them. And it's the differences in the DNA sequence that allow us to say this or that organism is closely related, less closely related, distantly related, scarcely related at all on the family tree. And so this is a DNA-based family tree that I'm talking about, but it represents the diversity of what those organisms look like and what they do. And so again, I will say, on the family tree of all organisms, bacteria show the most diversity in respect to what they are all about, what they can do. So that was the second generality about bacteria. Third generality about bacteria, they are the most ancient of organisms on Earth. Their roots go back close to 4 billion years ago. So if you're thinking of that family tree, the base of that family tree is at around 4 billion years ago. And the other organisms, animals, plants, fungi, protists or protozoans, branch off early, but they don't branch off with such enormous exuberance as the bacteria do, covering essentially all of the diverse possibilities of the family tree. So pretty much all of the major groups are starting back as early as 4 billion, but it's the bacteria that really diversify early and often at that point and from then on. So let's say I'm at a party, or let's say I'm talking to a group of students, and I want to talk about the antiquity of bacteria and all other organisms, and I want to put 4 billion into some sort of context. I will sometimes pace it off across the room. I will start at one end of the room, and I'll say, that's 4 billion. And then I will pace forward a little bit and say, this is the 3 billion point. And then about halfway across the room, I'll say, this is the 2 billion point. Then 1 billion, and then the other side of the room is the present. So I've got a timeline essentially that goes from 0 to 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 across the room. Or try this if you're in your car listening to this tape. You've got a dashboard in front of you. If you look at the midpoint of that dashboard, call that 2 billion years. Call the extreme left-hand corner of your dashboard 4 billion years and call the extreme right-hand corner of your dashboard the present, and you've got an entire timeline arrayed out in front of you. Okay, so if you can visualize that, let me tell you when various things were happening along that timeline. 4 billion years ago, that's the extreme left-hand side of the dashboard, or it's the extreme left-hand, perhaps, side of the room. 4 billion years ago, that's the origin of life. And in a subsequent lecture, I'll tell you a little bit more about why that seems to be a reasonable date for the origin of life. But right now, accept that is the origin of life at 4 billion years ago. And right away, bacteria began to diversify. So when I say bacteria are ancient, I mean their diversification began around 4 billion years ago. It isn't till about 2.5 billion years ago, so that's a little bit to the left of the midpoint of your timeline, about 2.5 billion years ago, that more complicated cells began to evolve, the kind of complicated cells that are our cells and the plant cells and fungi cells and protozoan cells. But it isn't till about 1 billion years ago. Now we're way over on the right-hand side of the timeline, we're over to the right-hand side of the room or the right-hand side of your dashboard. It isn't until 1 billion years ago that multicellular organisms began to evolve. And if we want to put ourselves, humans, on this timeline, well, we're essentially not on this timeline. This is a billion-year timeline. In every billion-year increment are 1,000 millions. And humans as a species started evolving about 1 million years ago. Therefore, if you pressed your hand flat up against the wall or flat up against the glass next to your dashboard, that might represent, that tiny, tiny space might represent the amount of time that we humans have been evolving. Rest of the organisms, the various animals and plants, started evolving about 1.5 billion years ago. So again, way over on the right-hand side of that timeline. So that was generality number 3. Bacteria are the most ancient of all organisms on Earth. But there is something else about them that makes them, I think, especially intriguing, and that is you might be tempted to think of them as being a scaled-down version of all of the other organisms, almost as though you could put organisms on a continuum from enormous to large to medium-sized to small to tiny and see it all as an almost unbroken spectrum or continuum of sizes. And actually, that doesn't work with bacteria for some reasons that I think are actually quite profound and are helpful in our understanding of bacteria in general. And so I will continue that in the second lecture and begin with that point, which will be also a continuation of these broad generalizations about bacteria.
This ends Lecture 1.